Greetings and welcome. It's your show, Take Two with Jerry and Debbie, and you on EWTN Radio. Happy Independence Day. We are just a year away from a milestone anniversary birthday for our country, the 250th. We want to just wish you a beautiful day. Hope it's going to be one spent with family, friends, loved ones, maybe hopefully a little bit of downtime. I'm Jerry Escher along with Debbie Georgiani. And Debbie, we're going to actually give our listeners, the Take Two family, a little bit of independence today from calling in.
That is true. So you're free from calling in. You don't have to call in because this is a pre-recorded, a brand new broadcast of a friend of Take Two's that's been on before. And he's back with us. And we are going to go in a deep dive history lesson. I love this because I think he is so brilliant at this. And every time I listen to him, I learn something. So we want the Take Two family to walk away on this Independence Day understanding history just a little bit better. So sit back, relax, and just stay tuned in the entire hour.
Our guest is William Federer. He is a nationally known speaker, best-selling author, and president of Amerisearch Incorporated. That is a publishing company dedicated to researching America's noble heritage. Bill's American Minute radio feature is broadcast daily across America and on the internet. His Faith in History television airs on the TCT network on stations across America and via DirecTV. And Bill's first book, America's God and Country Encyclopedia of Quotations, has sold over 500,000 copies, and he has a lot of other books as well. And you will find his latest, Miracles in American History, at AmericanMinute.com.
Well, Bill, welcome back to Take Two.
Hey, Debbie and Jerry, great to be with you.
Oh, we're so glad you're with us because you have a lot of information stuffed in that brain of yours about history, and we need to hear it and know it today. Bill, so many things are going on, and if you even just scroll through social media, podcasts, or even just posts, you'll see that there's a tension, there's an anxiety, there's all sorts of feelings that are arising from people in our country, in the U.S., and outside of our country of what's going to happen. Is history going to repeat itself? You know, on this Independence Day, yeah, we're celebrating and fireworks and we're excited about our country. But not that we can predict the future, but based on the rhythm of history, what do we have to look forward to, or what do we have to watch out for? But Bill, I'll let you maybe share with us, because I know we have just this brief time together with this pre-recorded broadcast. But I'll tell you, we can put a lot of things into this episode that could really help people today.
Yeah, well, you know, I read a lot of history, and every generation has a crisis. Attila the Hun had an army of 500,000 soldiers wiping out cities across Europe, Reims and Mainz, and a young woman named Genevieve gets all of Paris to fast and pray, and Attila skips sacking Paris. And then Pope Leo comes out and talks Attila out of sacking Rome and buys him about 20 years. But you look at Genghis Khan killed 30 million people from Korea to Hungary. You had the Spanish flu, the bubonic plague. Every generation has a crisis, and it's almost like, why does God allow it? Well, it sort of pushes us to a decision-making moment. Do something, do nothing. And historically, the church did something. You know, you had the election brothers during the bubonic plague, and they would collect the bodies that people threw out on the street and give them a Christian burial, and if they weren't dead yet, they'd do some hospice care, and every now and then one would recover, and then the family would donate. And while everybody else is running away from the crisis, so there's Father Damien in Hawaii. The people there were getting leprosy because of the whaling ships and the different diseases they didn't have immunity for. And they put the people with leprosy on an island, Molokai. And it had like this huge cliff that you couldn't go from one side to the other. And they wouldn't even pull the boat up to the shore. They would just get close and then shove the person with leprosy out, let them swim ashore because they didn't want to get anywhere close. Well, Father Damien goes to Hawaii, goes to the leper colony, spends a couple decades ministering to them, loving on them, taking care of them, bringing messages back to the family. Oh, how's my mom doing? How's my uncle? Please give him this present. Don't let him know I miss him. And when he dies, they are so touched, they put his statue at the Capitol in Honolulu, and they put his statue in the U.S. Capitol Statuary Hall. You're going through the U.S. Capitol, and there's a statue of Father Damien. Christians were the white blood cells. They were immediately rushed to where a need was and say, here I am. I was reading about the Sisters of St. Joseph, and St. Louis, Missouri, during the cholera epidemic of 1849. And everybody else was running away. Well, they were taken care of. About one out of every four of the nuns died. But they were known to say, hey, our lives belong to the Lord wherever he wants us. And so, yes, there's crises, but it's what are the stories we like the best? And it's where things look hopeless and God raises up little nobodies with faith and courage to turn things around. And whether it's a Gideon or a Moses or a David or Esther, you know, whether I die, I die. I'm going to go in and see the king. And this is just our turn. And so when you look at it from that perspective, you don't get quite as worried. But I do like to highlight how unique America is in world history. And one of the main reasons is that it lets us have more control over our lives. And feel free to interrupt at any time.
Nope.
But the most common form of government in world history is kings. Nimrod, Pharaoh, Caesar, Kaiser, Sultan, Tsar. And as the centuries go on, the kingdoms get bigger. Because with the latest military advancement, the kings can kill more people. Instead of Cain killing Abel with a rock, they can kill with a bronze weapon, an iron weapon, a phalanx spear, the big long spears the Greeks had, scimitar sword that the Muslims had, gunpowder that the Chinese invented. The weapon keeps improving, but it's that same fallen nature of Cain killing Abel. And and with technological advancements, kings can track more people. I mean, 2 BC, Augustus Caesar wanted a worldwide tracking system. It's called the census, the tax enrollment. If he could have had access to 5G and cell phones and facial recognition software, I bet he'd been tempted to use that. And so these empires keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Anybody that can plot on a graph sees that at some point it's going to max out on a global level. But Jesus said wheat and tares grow together till the harvest. And so we just, he chooses when we're going to be alive. And it's our job to let the Lord use us while we're here.
Bill, but hold on. Hold that thought. Right, it's a good point to pause just for a second here. We got a break that we cannot move. And back there, you hear the music for that. We're learning already from William Federer, our guest here on Take Two with Jerry and Debbie. We're talking history, especially the history of the United States, but we can look at it from even a broader perspective than that. When we come back, I just want to, Bill, I want to talk to you about just the importance of knowing our history, because I think a lot of people today sort of ignore that. I don't know how many people are studying history nowadays, but it's a very crucial thing that we need to do. So we'll talk about that when we come back.
Our guest today on this Independence Day, it's a pre-recorded new content broadcast for you, the Take Two family, is Bill Federer, and he is so smart. I love how he instructs us and informs us. And just, I think, Bill, the way you describe history and the way you, the difference, you know, snapshots of history throughout the centuries. I just love that because it allows us to relax a little. Like we're just got to be, we're in this time, we're in this place, and there are things we can do, like praying and fasting and all sorts of things to really kind of right this ship, if you will. So when you speak, Bill, I get very calm because it's not, and do you feel that way, Bill? I'm just curious because I agree with Jerry. It's important we know our history, and I think sometimes when we don't know it and we refuse to look at it, we're just destined to repeat itself. So do you feel that way, Bill? Knowing as much as you know, are you calm about being here today, living today in this world?
Yeah, you know, Jesus told Peter, pray lest you fall into temptation. And I thought, what is it about praying? Well, certainly you're thinking about God. And then Jesus taught that when you pray, our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. And you think, heaven. Well, you know, there's the sky where the birds fly, and then there's where the planets are, and then there's the heaven where the presence of the Lord is. But if we just look at the stars, it's the universe is 93 billion light years across, and according to most astronomers, it's still expanding at the speed of light. And when you realize, you know, you're just meditating on how God created it all. And, you know, the largest star they found is Stevens in 2-18. It's a super gas giant. It's so large, if you were to place it in our solar system, it would engulf the orbit of Saturn, the sixth planet from the sun. We're the third planet from the sun. Could you imagine one single star that enormous? And God made it all. Right? Mm-hmm. And he made you. And it's like, okay, when you realize how big he is and how he loves you, perfect love casts out fear. And then you look back at your problem in your life and what's going on in the world. I think he can handle it. I think he's big enough to handle it. So we trust him. But anyway, the thing I bring out about America is, again, for most of world history, you had kings ruling mm-hmm. through fear. Mm-hmm. And the first instance of this is Nimrod, Tower of Babel. So Josephus, the Jewish commentator, said Nimrod wanted to build his tower so high that if God destroyed the world again with a flood, he could survive on top. So it was this defiant against God. He wanted people to fear him more than fear God. That's the beginning of this dichotomy of, okay, government wants you to fear it more than God, and it comes down to Peter standing before the Sanhedrin, and they said, we gave you strict orders not to speak in this name. Mm-hmm. And Peter said, okay, it's better to obey God rather than men. I'm put to this, do I obey the government people or do I obey God? But that began with Nimrod and Nebuchadnezzar, right? When I blow my trumpet, you bottom my statue. The government wants to dictate the beliefs of the people, and God's jealous. He doesn't want that. And but then Nimrod made everybody in town bake bricks and bring them to build his tower, and would kill him if they didn't. And since the population of the world is there, right, according to most archaeologists, that between the Tigris and Euphrates rivers, it's very fertile, so it's called the Fertile Crescent, just down the mountain from Ararat, where Noah's Ark landed. Mm-hmm. And Nimrod wanted to control the population. In a sense, he was the first globalist. He was the first one-world government guy.
Wow.
Right? The population of the world was largely is centered there, and he wanted to control it through fear. He was, in a sense, the first globalist. And God comes down and confuses the languages, and the people scatter into language groups that turn into nations. Mm-hmm. Lo and behold, nations were God's invention to postpone a one-world government. And because you take the population of the world, you break it into these subgroups, they'll all start to cancel each other out. But every generation has some Pharaoh, Caesar, Kaiser, Sultan, Tsar mm-hmm. that wants to conquer other nations. And if left unchecked, he'd been happy to conquer them all. And so in that sense, death is a blessing because these dictators die off and the devil has to start from scratch again. But he does have the latest military weapons and technology. And it's interesting, Jesus tells his disciples, the kings of the Gentiles exercise authority over them, but it shall not be so among you. He that's greatest among you shall be the servant of all. I am among you as he that serveth. And so we're talking kingdoms, and most of the world kingdoms is top down through fear. And Jesus saying, my kingdom's different. It's bottom up through love, through service.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, you have an anomaly stands out, and it's ancient Israel. When they come out of Egypt around 1400 B.C., mm-hmm. for four centuries, there's no king. It's called the Hebrew Republic. It's the Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges, Ruth, 1 Samuel. It's that first 400 years of the Bible. There's no king.
Right.
You have millions of people, and it worked because every citizen was taught the law, and they were personally accountable to God to follow it. And so, so you're about to steal. Nobody's around. You know you can get away with it. And then you think, God's watching me. He wants me to be fair. He's going to hold me accountable in the future. Maybe I should hesitate stealing. And it creates a tiny thing in your head called the conscience. If everybody in the country believes this, you can maintain order with no king ruling through fear, right? Without any police. God's watching me. He wants me to be fair. He's going to hold me accountable in the future. And God knew they would sin. So once a year, they had the Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur. They'd sprinkle the blood of the lamb on the mercy seat, and everyone's sins were forgiven for the past year, and they would start the new year off with a clean slate. Mm-hmm. And obviously that is foreshadowing Jesus. He's our atonement, not just for the last year, but for our whole lives and all eternity. And
Amen.
But this system worked in the Hebrew Republic for four centuries until the Levite priests went woke. You say, what? Yeah, there's no more sin anymore. You can do whatever you want in the church. And here's Eli, the high priest. His own sons are sleeping with women in the very tent where the Ark of the Covenant is. Hmm. Another Levite with a silver graven image in the book of Judges, right, in this house of a guy named Micah. And the tribe of Dan comes along and steals the graven image and tells this Levite, come along with us. You can be a priest to our whole tribe. And you're like, what's this Levite doing with a graven image? Isn't that like one of the commandments? You're not supposed to have them. Right. And then there's a Levite with a concubine. The law says the Levite's to marry a virgin of his own tribe. Here he is with the woman he's not even married to. So he's not following the law. And the poor concubine is raped to death by a bunch of sodomites. It's a tragic story in the book of Judges. And by the time you're grossed out, you read this line, every man did that which was right in their own eyes. Why? Because the priest stopped teaching what was right in the Lord's eyes. It's, hey, whatever goes. And so they all go to Samuel the prophet, and they say this self-government system's not working anymore. We want to be like the other countries. We want a king. Samuel cries, and the Lord tells him, they did not reject you, they rejected me. So God's original plan for Israel was to not have a king. Everybody taught the law and personally accountable to God to follow it. And a telling story, Saul is now the first king, and he's pouting that his son Jonathan became friends with David. And he turns to the soldiers, and he says, you guys know that my son Jonathan's friends with David, and you're not snitching on him. And this one soldier, Doeg the Edomite, says, king, I'm your friend. I saw David go to this town, and the priest there gave him some bread and the sword of Goliath that was stored there. Saul says, tell the priest to come here. They show up. He turns to his soldiers, and he says, kill them. The soldiers hesitate, and Doeg the Edomite goes out there and kills them all. What just happened? The soldiers were still operating under the old system, where each individual is accountable to God to follow the law, and the law says you need two or more witnesses before you condemn somebody to death. There's only one witness, this Doeg guy. They're hesitating. They still have a conscience. Doeg says, king, I'm going to surrender my conscience to you. You tell me to kill him, I'll kill him. Tell me to kill the baby in the womb, I'll kill it. Tell me there's no more male and female. Tell me kids can be furries. It's like, whatever, I'm just a bunch of mush. When you blow the trumpet, I'll bow to your statue. All right? If you're the Nimrod and tell me to bake bricks, I'll bring them. And why is this story important? The kings of England looked to the King Saul and on part of the Bible, where the Pilgrims and Puritans that founded New England looked to the pre-King Saul part of the Bible. Right? So the King of England was the royal gang leader. I mean, Henry VIII, he killed Sir Thomas More, right? St. Thomas More. He said, okay, I'm going to switch from Catholic to Anglican, and if you don't come along, I'm going to kill you. And they killed him. Right. And then the King Henry VIII killed William Tyndale because he translated the Bible and he didn't want that. And so here's the King of England saying, you believe exactly what I tell you to believe, or I'm going to burn you at the stake. And so the Pilgrims and Puritans said, no, it's a personal relationship with the Lord. We're going to flee. And they set up a covenant form of government in New England, looking back to that pre-King Saul 400-year period, the Hebrew Republic. That's why they taught Hebrew at Yale and Harvard. Wow. To this day, Yale has Hebrew characters on its coat of arms, truth and light. Amazing. And so that covenant over time turned into the Constitution. So the word federal is Latin for covenant. We have a covenant form of government that where we rule ourselves, right, without a king, and it's bottom up. And so the word citizen is Greek. It means co-ruler, co-sovereign, co-king. So in Europe, kings have subjects who are subjected to the king's will. In America, we have citizens. And so we pledge allegiance to the flag and to the republic. We're basically pledging allegiance to us being in charge of ourselves. And so when somebody protests the flag, what they're saying is, I don't want to be king anymore. I protest this system where I participate in ruling myself. It's like, okay, somebody else will be glad to tell you what to do. And So in America, you get to be the king with the little K over your life, and then all of us together are king over the country. And then we have the voluntary opportunity of surrendering our life to Jesus, the King of Kings.
Mm. And yeah.
Anyway, that's sort of a big picture.
Yeah.
And it's government from the consent of the governed. We have rights from a creator. I was reading John F. Kennedy's inaugural address, and he said, "The rights of man come not from the generosity of the state, but from the hand of God." Mm. And so that's why in the Declaration, they say all men are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. The King of England didn't like that. He had this thing called the divine right of kings, where the creator gives all the power to this one guy, the king, and he dispenses it to his subjects as he pleases. Well, in America, we skip the king. We say the creator gives the rights to each one of us, and we're all equal, and we choose from amongst equals who's going to be our political leaders, and if they don't do what we want, we vote them out, put in somebody else. So it's government from the consent of the governed. And then Harry S. Truman, in his inaugural, that we believe all men are created equal because we're created in the image of God. And then it's like, okay, well, what about other countries? India, there's 300 million different gods, right? So pick which one you're in the image of. And they don't have equality. If you're a Brahmin in the highest caste, there's, you know, half a dozen different castes. And in the Hindu belief system, a Brahmin is near divinity. Mm-hmm. And they're more equal than a Dalit, untouchable in the lowest caste. They got to take care of the sewers, you know. In Islamic culture, if you're a Muslim male, you're worth more than a Muslim female, right? A guy can have four wives. Muhammad said it takes two women to testify in court against one man because a woman's mind's deficient. And then a kafir infidel is not equal to a Muslim. And then in atheistic countries, your worth is dependent on your utility, your usefulness to the state, to the group. And if the state thinks that you're going to help it get more powerful, the state thinks your life is valuable to it. If you're challenging the state and want to take away its power, it views you as a threat and will use the state power to crush you. But in America, you're equal, not because you're royalty, not because you're in a Muslim male or a Brahmin or a communist CCP member, you're equal because you're made in the image of God.
Well, wait a minute. Okay.
God's not a respecter of persons.
Right. So, Bill, I think what I'm grasping of what you're trying to tell us, this is a beautiful time and day and age that we live in. And our structure is set up properly if we enter into it, right? With knowing who's in charge, and we are, you know, sons and daughters of the Most High God. And so to understand that. So are you also saying that we should be very at peace with living right now, instead of saying things like, I wish I lived 200 years ago, or I wish I, you know, 100 years ago was so much better than today? Because what you were sharing earlier is really nothing new. It has a cycle to it, a rhythm to it.
Yeah, it sounds sort of romantic. Oh, I wish I could have lived back then and back then. It's like, yeah, but you read about the dentist, you know, poor George Washington.
Oh,
he
right.
lost every tooth.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have tooth care. And by the time they were like, we're making like, you know, wooden teeth with like this makeshift spring in the back. They had to stuff cotton in his mouth to keep his lips there when they painted his picture that's on our dollar bill.
Oh.
I mean, so if you lived yeah. back then, you
there
wouldn't
were,
have.
There were problems. Yeah. Okay, let's hold it there, Bill. This is amazing. We're getting a great history lesson from our dear friend, Bill Federer, and we want you to continue to stay tuned in. We'll be right back with this pre-recorded Independence Day broadcast of Take Two with Jerry and Debbie. Stay with us.
Thank you so much for tuning in today. Maybe you've got us on in the background as you enjoy time with family, friends, loved ones. Maybe some of the, you know, having a wonderful barbecue, or maybe you've gone to Mass today, gone to church today, and given thanks to God for the freedoms that we do enjoy in this country, the United States of America. We're talking with Bill Federer about not only the history of our country, which, of course, is coming up on its 250th birthday next year, a year from today, but, you know, he's weaving in a lot of, you know, from Scripture, the Old Testament, and the way that populations have evolved and forms of government have evolved, and it's just really fascinating. We're going to get to more of that right after this. I want to tell you, first of all, though, that, you know, Jesus is seeking you. That should not be news to you, but he does want to relate to you personally. He wants a level of intimacy with you that's only possible through the Most Holy Eucharist. And EWTN invites you to join Father Wade Menezes for the Eucharistic Devotion EWTN Online Learning Series. It's a free video series that guides you through reflections on the Eucharist inspired by the writings of Mother Angelica and the great saints. And you can enroll in our courses today at learningseries.ewtn.com.
Okay, so we're back talking with Bill Federer, and I can tell you, Bill, that you changed me with this broadcast, because I'm one of those people that say all the time, I wish I lived 100 years ago, or it seems like much simpler times back then. And, you know, as you were painting the history of our country and how it has progressed, we should be really grateful that we live in this day and age, and this is exciting times. But I would love for you to kind of share with us what we should be looking forward to and how we should participate in being good citizens and patriotic and be loyal and really understand things better, because I think down deep we all want a peaceful, you know, safe, wonderful country to live in.
Yeah. I put together a book called Silence Equals Consent, and I go through the early part of America, where you literally had churches founding cities and colonies. And then you had, in the early 1700s, a revival called the Great Awakening Revival. And it was great, but part of it was, if you really have an experience with Jesus, you're going to withdraw from worldly things like bars and brothels and government. And so that was the beginning of this idea that if you're really spiritual, you'll withdraw from government. And but that brings up a dilemma. If all the spiritual people withdraw themselves, who's left to be involved but the less spiritual? And because they're less spiritual, they're going to yield to their ambitions, become power hungry, and become tyrants. And so it's this idea that I say, well, it's a personal relationship with the Lord. It is, but don't you want your kids to have a personal relationship? Because if you don't get involved, ungodly people are going to teach your kids in school that God doesn't exist. And they're going to teach him that there's no sin, right? Look at the library books. Try this kind of sex. Try that kind of sex. And if there's no sin, you don't need a savior to save you from your sins. Mm-hmm. They're undermining the entire gospel. So you have to admit it's a pretty clever trick the devil's pulled to get Christians who believe the gospel of Christ, let their kids be taught the gospel of Antichrist, right? And so we the same way you're silent at a wedding ceremony, you're given your consent. Well, if you're silent when bad things are going on in the community, you're given your consent. And so we need to speak up. We need to be a part. You can do it respectfully. You can follow the system and do it. But we, you know, every parent's faced with this situation with your kids, right? At some point, you got to correct them. But you know, in going back to the history of the country, you had every colony started by a different Christian denomination. So Virginia was Anglican, Massachusetts was Puritan, Rhode Island was Baptist, New York was Dutch Reformed, Delaware and New Jersey were originally Swedish Lutheran, and then they became Dutch Reformed, and then they became British. Connecticut and New Hampshire were Congregationalist, Pennsylvania Quaker, and Maryland Catholic. And they didn't get along, and they'd tar and feather each other and chase each other out of each other's colonies. But then when the Revolution started, they all had to work together against the King of England. After the Revolution, their attitudes began to change. Well, we may not agree on religion all the time, but you are willing to fight for my freedom. I need to let you practice your faith. And so originally, Catholics were only allowed in three colonies, Maryland, Pennsylvania, and New York. And you had one Catholic signed the Declaration, Charles Carroll of Carrollton. And Maryland's history is interesting. right? It was founded by Lord Baltimore of Ireland, who was Catholic, and they were very tolerant, and they let anybody of any denomination come in. But then Virginia chased out the Puritans, and then the Puritans appealed to the Catholics in Maryland and said, hey, can we come in? They said, yeah, yeah. So the Puritans founded Annapolis, and then they decided to take their ships down to the Maryland capital at St. Mary's and sack it and take over the colony. And then they actually passed laws to disarm papists. And if a man dies and his widow married a Catholic, they would take the children away from the family. I mean, it was pretty bad. And so Charles Carroll's dad appealed to the King of France and said, hey, the British drove the French out of Canada, out of Acadia, and they settled in Louisiana. And the Louisiana pronunciation of Acadia was Cajun. and so they were saying, we might move the Catholics in Maryland down to Louisiana. But then the revolution started, and that's when John Carroll, the first bishop and the first, archbishop in America, John Carroll, goes with, he's the founder of Georgetown. He goes with Ben Franklin up to Canada. There was an effort to try to get Canada to join us in the revolution. They didn't. But Ben Franklin and the other leaders were so impressed with John Carroll that they began to realize that, hey, we need to tolerate Catholics as well as everybody else. And so it was a state-by-state situation where it began to spread. And so at the time of the founding, I read through every state constitution. 9 of the original state constitutions required office holders to be Protestant. 3, it was just plain Christian. And then Rhode Island had 0 religious requirements. They were Baptist, and they said if you required someone to be a Christian, they could say they were, even if they weren't, and that would be hypocritical. But then you had an Irish potato famine, and millions of Irish Catholics come to America, and the Catholic percentage goes from 1% to 20% in a decade. And there's an initial backlash from the Protestants, but then it settles down, and there's a persecution of Jews in Bavaria, middle 1800s, they come across, and then they get tolerated, and then finally the tolerance keeps going out and out until it tolerates anybody. And unfortunately now it's almost tolerating everybody except Christians. But this is important for us to understand that the freedoms we have, that a lot of people put a lot of effort into giving us these freedoms, and that we shouldn't just let them be taken away at a moment's notice by whatever the latest view is. Charles Carroll wrote to Reverend John Stanford October 9th, 1827. He said, to obtain religious as well as civil liberty, I entered jealously into the revolution. And observing the Christian religion divided into many sects, S-E-C-T-S, I founded the hope that no one would be so predominant as to become the religion of the state. That hope was thus early entertained, because all of them joined in the same cause with few exceptions. And so he said, there's so many denominations, they're going to sort of cancel each other out, and we don't have to worry about an Anglican church being set up persecuting everybody, or a Lutheran church or whatever. And John Carroll, who founded Georgetown, wrote, freedom and independence acquired by the mingled blood of Protestant and Catholic fellow citizens should be equally enjoyed by all. George Washington wrote to Bishop John Carroll, March 1790, Your fellow citizens will not forget the patriotic part which you took in the accomplishment of the revolution. May the members of your society in America, animated alone by the pure spirit of Christianity, enjoy every temporal and spiritual felicity. And so this is Bishop John Carroll. He writes to Rome in 1790. The 13 provinces of North America rejected the yoke of England. they proclaimed at the same time freedom of conscience. Before this great event, the Catholic faith had penetrated two provinces only, Maryland and Pennsylvania. In all the others, the laws against Catholics were enforced. By the Declaration of Independence, every difficulty was removed. The Catholics were placed on a level with their fellow Christians, and every political disqualification was done away. And so we see that this was a process of these freedoms. And then we had the Louisiana Purchase, and John Carroll was then promoted to Archbishop in 1808, the first Archbishop in America. And his older brother, Daniel Carroll, signed the Constitution. So two Catholics signed the Constitution, Daniel Carroll and Thomas Fitzsimmons of Pennsylvania. And
You're laying out something that is so important for us to understand, and that is the you've recently been talking about the religious history of our country, the United States of America, and our freedoms that we enjoy. And you made the wonderful, I think, very important comment: we shouldn't let them be easily taken away. And I find anyway, and I think Debbie might agree, you know, a lot of people in our country today, especially I think young people, unfortunately, just sort of ignore these historical facts and the story or the history of our country, and they just sort of are you know, moved along by the current winds that are blowing at a certain time, ideological winds, and so forth. Do you find that maybe is history something that you are, you know, steeped in? Do you find that a lot of people today just simply are not as enthusiastic about it? That may be putting it, you know, in a friendly way, but are people just sort of ignoring this and just thinking that history kind of starts, you know, this morning?
Yeah. One of my presentations, I start off with a digitized picture, and you're so zoomed in, all you see is pixels. And I ask the audience, what are you looking at? They're like, I can't tell. So I click zoom out. Still can't tell. Zoom out. Well, it sort of looks like a nose. Click zoom out a little bit more, and then you see it's a face, and you can recognize the person. I thought, someday we're so zoomed in to the day-to-day news, and all we see is the pixels. Well, today sort of looks like yesterday. I really can't tell a difference. But if you zoom out, look at a couple decades, a couple centuries, a couple millennia, it's like, okay, we can see. It's pretty much world history is top down through fear. If you're friends with the gang leader king, you're more equal. If you're not his friend, you're less equal. If you're his enemy, you're dead. It's called treason, or you're a slave. But ancient Israel stood out, and America stands out. And so we get to be in charge. And so you begin to recognize how unique. I love this one quote from Arthur Schlesinger Jr., a Pulitzer Prize-winning historian on John F. Kennedy's staff. Mm-hmm. And Schlesinger said, history is to the nation what memory is to the individual. Mm. So imagine an individual who has lost their memory. Maybe they have Alzheimer's. They forgot who they are. They forgot who you are. You can take anything away from them. We sort of have national Alzheimer's. Here we are, the freest country the planet Earth has ever seen, with more individual opportunity. Mm-hmm. And we forgot who we are. And we're just letting our freedoms get taken away. And so when you tell people these stories, it's like giving an Alzheimer patient their memory back. You know, I just got a report from Nigeria, and the radical Muslims are wiping out entire Christian villages. I talked to a Catholic priest in Tanzania, and he says the Muslims are killing over there and in the Congo. And then in India, they have a resurgence of national Hinduism, and they're persecuting the Christians at an unprecedented level, you know, in North Korea, and then, you know, the Xi Jinping in China, you know, they have videos that they bulldoze down churches, you know, and so we realize that, you know, it's beginning to encroach in America, but we need to, and Ireland, some of these countries that have been bastions of faith, we see, different ideologies coming in. And it's a socialist tactic called deconstruction, where you separate people from their past, get them into a neutral where they don't remember where they came from, and then you can brainwash them into the future you have
into
planned
a new
for.
Direction. Yeah, yeah. Well, this actually... So go ahead, Bill. Finish your thought there.
Oh, so it's a sales technique. If I was a toothpaste salesman, the first thing I do is tell you negative things about the toothpaste you're currently brushing with. You're still brushing with that stuff? Haven't you read it? It'll eat the enamel off your teeth. Ooh, you're repulsed by it. Now I have you in a neutral, you're open-minded, and then I can give you my pitch for this tartar control breath freshener. And so they did this in Europe. Mm-hmm. Europe went from 1,000 years of Catholic cathedrals and Protestant Reformation and Jewish neighborhoods to the French Revolution, free sex, anything goes, and now Europe is socialist, and the number one name for newborns is Mohammed. Mm-hmm. And they're having more kids, and so, you know, you realize that we lift our head up from the being in the water, we can see this water's floating downstream, maybe toward a waterfall.
Right. Well, let's actually move into one of your books in a moment. But let me just share this real quickly with our Take Two family, because we always highlight certain programs and certain podcasts that we think would be of interest to the Take Two group. So here it is. Dr. Ray. Of course, everybody loves Dr. Ray. Another great podcast on EWTN's Podcast Central is the Dr. Ray podcast. Dr. Ray Guarendi's, he talks about parenting issues, from diaper dilemmas to teenage traumas to college crisis. He tackles family, personal, and professional life issues in a straightforward and often humorous way. You can hear this and other faith-filled podcasts at EWTN Podcast Central. Visit EWTN.com/radio and click on Podcast Central today. And that's Dr. Ray Guarendi's podcast. Love it. Our guest today for this pre-recorded broadcast, and by the way, thank you to Michael McCall putting this together. He's our wonderful producer for an Independence Day special for our Take Two family, is Bill Federer. And he is brilliant. Okay. And if you want to learn more about him, go to AmericanMinute.com. I am on your site, always, Bill, and I love it. And you have Miracles in American History, and we want to give you ample time to talk about that. But you have other products, you have DVDs, you have all sorts of things on your website, AmericanMinute.com. And folks, I would definitely check Bill's website out, because it is so rich in of course, history, but it is the depth that you go into, Bill, is phenomenal. I have got to tell you that I've suggested you to so many of my friends who are history buffs like myself, and they have been they're glued to your website. So great job that you're doing. But tell us about Miracles in American History.
Yeah, so you have story after story of things looking hopeless and people calling for prayer and courage, and things turn around. So the Continental Congress meets, and they have a day of fasting and prayer 2 months before they do the Declaration of Independence. And it was unanimously passed that through the merits and mediation of Jesus Christ, obtained pardon and forgiveness. And so then they... the Declaration itself mentions God four times. And so, Brooklyn Heights, George Washington's men are dug in facing the East River. The British find a loyalist, and this loyalist shows them how to march 10,000 British troops all night long through Jamaica Pass and attack George Washington from behind on August 27th, 1776. It's the entire American army. There's no second string waiting somewhere. It's the whole thing. And it's the biggest battle of the entire Revolution, and 3,000 Americans are killed, shot in the back. I mean, they just taken by total surprise, and only 300 British. It looks really bad, and Washington's pinned up against the water, and the sun goes down. It's probably running through his mind that America's going to end up being another colony like India or Kenya or Sudan, but instead, Washington gets every boat he can find, and they're ferrying the troops across the East River to Manhattan Island. The cannons, the horses, doing it in quiet and in pitch black, and then the sun starts to come up, and he had only moved half the army. And his chief of intelligence, Major Ben Talmadge, says, those of us who remained in the trenches became very anxious for our own safety as the sun was coming up. And he says, I remember perfectly well a dense fog rose off the river and seemed to settle in a peculiar manner over both encampments. I recollect this providential occurrence perfectly well, and so very dense was the atmosphere that you could scarce discern a man at 6 yards distance. So under the cover of fog, George Washington continues to ferry the troops across. And around noon, he's on the last boat that leaves. The fog lifts, the British charge, no one's there. It was the last chance to have them capture the entire American army all at once. Washington said the hand of Providence has been so conspicuous in the course of the war that he must be worse than an infidel that lacks faith. But it will be time enough for me to turn preacher when my present appointment ceases. You have Benedict Arnold. He was the hero of the Battle of Saratoga, and he's in charge of West Point, and he's been passed over for some promotions, and his wife, whose dad is a loyalist, keeps nagging him for a year that the British would take care of him if he was on the British side. So she arranges for him to meet this British spy, John Andre, and Benedict Arnold is going to betray West Point to the British on the exact day George Washington is coming to inspect West Point. It would be a double whammy. And so he meets with this John Andre spy. John Andre's dressed as a civilian. He's walking through no man's land, about to go to the British side, when some soldiers come out of the woods dressed as German Hessian. And if he would have kept his mouth shut, he could have made it across. But he blurts out, "It's finally good to see some men on our side." And these soldiers say, "What do you mean, our side?" He says, "Well, you're Hessians. You're working with the British." He goes, "No, we're Americans dressed as Hessians to try to find spies." And he goes, "You know, I sort of knew that, but I just can't tell nowadays." And he tries to talk his way out of it. They make him take off his boot, and in his stocking is a map of West Point. And they're like, "You didn't tell us about this." And he tries to talk his way out. They said, "Explain it to our commander." And so word gets back to Benedict Arnold that they caught the guy he just met with. And so he flees on a ship called the Vulture. And General Nathaniel Greene writes, "Treason of the blackest dye was yesterday discovered. General Arnold, who commanded at West Point, was about to give the American cause a deadly wound, if not fatal stab. Happily, the treason had been timely discovered to prevent the fatal misfortune. The providential train of circumstances which led to its discovery affords the most convincing proof that the liberties of America are the object of divine protection." Wow. And then there's the Battle of Cowpens. I don't know if I have a couple more minutes.
About 2 minutes, yeah.
And so it's it was the battle that was in Mel Gibson's The Patriot. But you have the British chasing American General Daniel Morgan, and the British have their fast cavalry called the Dragoons, and Daniel Morgan can't outrun them, so he sets up in front of a river, and he has his militia guys in front, his Continental soldiers behind, and the butcher, this 26-year-old Tarleton, he's riding with his Dragoon cavalry, and they fire once, they fire twice, and then they charge, and they capture 800 of the British, and now they're leaving, and they cross the Yadkin River into North Carolina, and or the Catawba River, and the British show up, but before the British can cross, there's a flash flood, and they're delayed, and then they cross the Yadkin River. The Americans cross, the British show up before they can cross, another flash flood. And then they get to the Dan River, and the Americans cross before the British can cross, another flash flood. And Sir Henry Clinton writes, "Here the Royal Army was again stopped by a sudden rise of the waters, which almost had fallen just miraculously to let the enemy over, who could not else have eluded Lord Cornwallis's grasp, so close was he upon the rear." But in three rivers, lowering so the Americans cross, rising to stop the British, Ben Franklin, when he signed the Constitution, negotiated it, and it mentions the Holy Trinity. But he said, "During our contest with Great Britain, when we were sensible of danger, we had daily prayer in this assembly for divine protection." And so our founders were men and women of courage, but they were also of faith. Mm-hmm. And that's what it took to gain our country. That's what it's going to take to keep our country. And so we remind ourselves of this. It's just a thrill to be on with you today.
Those river moments reminded me of the Red Sea.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Go ahead, Deb. Sorry.
Well, real. I was taking notes the entire hour, Bill, and this is what I came up with because you are just so amazing. I'm definitely convinced you've got nine brains in that head of yours because you are just incredible how you store everything and can recall all these key moments in history. It's incredible, Bill. So God bless you with a beautiful brain. So keep using it. That's number one. Second takeaway real quick. I'm getting back to AmericanMinute.com and checking this out. Miracles in American History. I love this. And all the other works that you've got going on there. Well done. Also, I wrote down, appreciate what you have. Be people of faith. Get involved. Don't stay quiet. I got all these little takeaways, Jerry. I think I got it covered.
Amen to that. Bill, thank you so much for your time on the program today. It's always good to have you on, and we will definitely do it again, okay?
Yes, well, you are a tremendous inspiration to me, and happy 4th to all the listeners.
Amen. William Federer, our guest here. It's been a pre-record. Thanks again to Michael McCall, our producer, for putting this show together. And we're going to be back live with you on Monday. Until then, I am Jerry Usher, along with Debbie Giorgiani again. A blessed Independence Day to all of you. We must really keep in focus what this day is truly, really all about. So as you celebrate with family and friends and loved ones and have those barbecues and those softball games and all of that, just make sure you pause for a moment. Hit your knees and thank God that we do live in this country with all of the freedoms that we do have. Okay, so until again, until Monday, I want to wish you a beautiful and blessed day. See you real soon.